Hey team, welcome back to the Pinout Podcast. This episode, we are joined by Mike Chadwick, an expert in tactical athlete coaching. Let's hear from him now.
Thanks for joining me today, mate. Really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule coming on. So just to get it kicked off then, one movement you can't live without?
One movement?
Yeah.
Have to be the squat every day. It's especially now I've got a little girl. It's you know, it's even more precious. But it's always been a movement that I've always been pretty decent at. So technically, I'm quite good at it. So I've always enjoyed it. We enjoy the ones we love, don't we? But now I've got a little girl. I spend so much time in that position, and I'm trying hard to remain in that position to teach her and to keep her going. Because it's something when you look at her, we lose the ability to squat somewhere because we used to do it perfectly.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's complete human. I look at her squat and it's unbelievable. And it's like, where does it all go wrong? It's a personal thing for me. I'm looking at it all the time thinking, when does that stop?
Sure.
Like, it just stops and it must just slowly but surely run out. And it's like, so I'm always in that position trying to just show her that that doesn't stop. You stay in there. It's really important for life. And, you know,
that's awesome.
It's the squat, mate.
That is awesome. A lot of the sort of, some of the courses and stuff I've been on when it comes to learning about training, they look at the squat and they always refer back to kids and babies and how they squat. And like you say, what's changed for the squat to, you know, become a poor movement for adults? That's really interesting. So just a little bit about your past, present, future then, mate. So sort of past growing up, like where did you grow up? What sort of school? Were you active as a kid?
So I played football as a kid. I grew up all over the place. I was a pad brat. So my dad was a soldier. We moved all around. And then I played football at a decent standard. And then my mum and dad split up and he was a certain part of the military where he then moved away to somewhere else. And we ended up basically going to the cheapest place we could possibly find, which just so happens we had zero money. So it just so happened to be a town called St. Helens. They'll kill me for saying that. But in St. Helens, they do not play football at all. It's rugby.
Oh, of course. It. Yeah, yeah.
And then, so I turned up to first high school, having just finished my time at Liverpool Academy, couldn't get there anymore, and didn't kick a ball ever again. It was like, that was it, stop. It was like, there's a funny shaped ball, you run with that. So I tried to remain active with doing the sports that I could, just to socialise and get involved. But I've grew up all over the place. Travelled all across the world as a kid, and then inevitably it was always going to be my direction as well.
Yeah, so joined the army then, following your dad's footsteps, was it?
Yeah, so it was more to put food on the table, if I'm brutally honest. I've got a little sister. My mum was quite ill and there was no money coming in at all. So it was up to me to go out and find it. I tried every job I literally would do everything, grafting as at 14, and ended up joining the army as early as I possibly could. And literally sent every pay packet home. And that was, I made that decision very early on. So it wasn't for Queen or country. It wasn't for, you know, for honour and fighting for Britain or whatever. It ruthlessly wasn't. It was there to put money on, to bring money home to the family.
Oh, mate, respect.
Thanks, mate. I joined the Reg because they offered me £200 extra a month. I had no idea what that involved. Seriously, I turned up to Parachute Regiment Depot and I was in big, big trouble. I was in deep water, mate. It was
hideous. Oh,
I just presumed that was the army. I had no idea. I just presumed that was
the
army is.
Yeah, and I guess like when you're in sort of like the recruitment office and stuff, you get like told, oh, there's this part. And at the time, you don't really know about this big organisation, all the different moving parts. So it is interesting. So join the Parachute Regiment then. And how long did you serve with those?
So I joined the Parachute Regiment in 2000, which started depot in 2007, passed out 6 months later, first time, fortunately, and went over to Tupara. And then I served in both Tupara Special Forces Support Group, was a PTI up at the Infantry Training Centre in Catterick. And then I was subsequently selected for the Royal Army Physical Training Corps in 2017 and spent a few years there before I left officially just over a year ago now.
Okay.
To take up a reserve role back in the Paras.
Oh, okay. Yeah. With four Paras, that.
Yeah.
Awesome. So one of the questions I had last night from one of the guys was, what made you leave the military?
There was a couple of things, really. It was my coaching was going really well.
Yeah.
I started taking on people outside of, so predominantly what my initial social demographic, crazy enough, was New York firefighters.
Right. Yeah.
I created the concept of the tactical athlete, and I was running around with it, saying we have to be athletic, improve sure. athletic ability, start treating ourselves like an actual athlete in the tactical world, because it's not a case of if you lose, you lose pride or loss of points, as we do in every sporting context. If we get it wrong, we die, or someone gets hurt.
Yeah.
So I was like, we need to take this shit quite seriously. And I really ran at it and utilized this concept. And then over time, it started to become, I was helping some friends in the S&C to get on over the hills on UKSF. And then that transpired into a business model. And I just ran with it. And it was through individualizing training for any sort of aim, taking your first or next step in tactical athlete development. And that was whether you was starting basic training or going on your next promotional course or going on to the peak of physical health in the military of UKSF. And it was, I just ran at that, and it was growing and growing and growing. Social media was growing. And, I just felt it was the right time. I just had a little girl, as I mentioned earlier, and it was, I joined the PT Corps, and it wasn't, I absolutely loved the PT Corps. I thought it was amazing. There's some amazing people in there. But it wasn't the brotherhood that I had in the parachute regiment.
Okay. Yeah.
And I missed that. And it's a very lonely job, the PT Corps. It's very rewarding, but it's very, very lonely. You're on your own. You go to a different unit with a different cap badge to everyone else. And it's you're an attached arm then.
Sure. I've actually heard it described as a franchise before, almost.
So it's a strange one, mate. And it just, I was doing all the, I went up to, my last posting was up at AFC Harrogate, and we, I met now a very close friend of mine, a guy called Ben Leach, who's an exercise rehabilitation instructor. We created these programs that was just taking over, and things were just so, so good.
Sure.
But it was just wasn't the paras. And, I literally, when I was in the paras, though, I was spending 3 weeks out of 4 weeks away. I just got married, just had a baby, and I was just like, you know what? I want to go home now.
Yeah.
And that was that. I had to make that decision. It was a difficult one. You got things over external factors. My mum had died. As I told you, she was ill. She lasted all the way up until then.
Sorry, Tim.
That's all right, man. It was just the right time. A lot of things came together. And then the reserve thing happens. And that I got offered basically a lot of days, full-time days on that to basically come over and selfish way for the Paras and come back and help them. And
sure.
I had to accept it.
That's present day, well. Isn't it? That's what you're doing currently.
Yeah, so I don't really, there's not so much of me in green kit. I'm a fond believer of staying in my lane. So if I'm kicking doors down or whatever, then we're in serious trouble. But if, I understand the concept and the kinology of what that takes, but it's, so staying in my lane and all still to do with physical development. I am actually having to go on a course in Brecon. So the plan has always been for me to get commissioned.
Okay, yeah.
The Paras, but there's a change of policy at the moment that is holding me back because I got promoted to staff sergeant upon leaving.
Yeah.
That now puts me into the bracket of going over as a late entry officer. The Paras don't have. So it's all very different. A lot of things changed last minute, and I'm waiting for this policy to kick in and allow me to go and basically just do the courses. So until then, they're sending me on. I'm going to go crack seniors out. It's only the reserve one, so it's crash course. But it's got to go do it. So go and get that done.
It is, mate. So that's sort of future plans then is to commission 10.
So I spoke to them last week. There's still the plan is wholeheartedly to make me as a commissioned officer back into the parachute regiment and then work hopefully as a HQ asset and just continue in my line of physical development, stay in line with that. Because that's what I'm good at. You know, it's I'll still do all the things that's the requirement of an infantry officer, but they're very on the same page as me, where it's, you know, stay in your lane. This is what you're good at. Utilizing in that, and it will only make everyone else stronger. So that's the plan.
Sounds awesome, mate. Happy days. Sounds good.
Yeah, and it works around my life as well. Works around my coaching, which is, you know, is that's still front and center. I'm still absolutely loving that.
Yeah, that's good. And it's good after all these sort of years, you've got, like you say, PT core, and then you've come out and done the coaching. You're still enjoying coaching. That's really good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's because people are still winning. People are still achieving stuff. It'd be pretty shit if everyone was failing, but it's
yeah, absolutely.
Because people are doing all right, it's enjoyable.
Yeah, that's it. Cool. I got a couple of questions about the army, sort of the physical robustness and some of the mindset stuff. So do you think fitness and physical robustness in the army has declined due to lack of punchy tours? It's one of the questions I had last night.
I don't think fitness has declined. I actually would go the other way, and I would say that fitness has improved. But what people deem as being fit has changed, so that everyone's opinion on what fitness is completely different. You know, just literally 3 years ago, we defined fitness as who could run around the track the quickest in trainers.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you know, and I would argue that's not the definition of fitness. So the change of fitness tests has highlighted that we're going in a different direction, which is good. And that's my early start of PT Corps around about that era where we were discussing and going through that change. I would argue that that's better, much better. So the testing's changed, which is good. So testing should a program should almost fall out from a testing protocol. So we need to understand current ability in order to find direction.
Absolutely.
Now the aim will always change as the commander's intent changes or the situation or the battlefield changes, but we don't know where we're going to go if we don't know where we are right now. So testing protocol is fantastic. That has changed. What we do with that information and that data, though, that's where we struggle. That's where the military struggles. So, you know, we pulled out the SCR, conditioning review, which is a key point. It's a review. It's a review of health and fitness and performance. My worry is, and it's always been a worry of mine, and I've always stated this in the various meetings we've had about it, is that what are we doing with that data? Yes, a broad jump will showcase lower limb explosive power, but what does that mean? What does that mean to your normal PTI who's got an 8-week course under the belt? And if we don't know what that means, then we don't know how to make it better. And if we don't know what it does, then what are we making it better to do? So it's very difficult for us to work out where we're going.
Sure.
So the testing's changed, which is brilliant. So first and foremost, we needed to change the test. Fantastic. But now we need to do something with that data of the test.
Cool.
That's what worries me. So in answer to your question, I don't think physical health has declined. I think our opinion of physical health has changed.
Sure.
And predominantly what the military needed to do, which was very clever, was we needed to improve strength because the cost of injuries was too much. If you consider it as a business model, the cost of every musculoskeletal injury is avoidable. Apart from if you fall off a 6-foot wall and you go over your ankle, that's what's known as trauma. So there's zero we can do about that. We can help affect change, and we can affect the ligaments and the muscles around the ankle, and we can around the lower limb legs and ensure that we reduce the chance of that ankle going over, for example. But some things are not avoidable. But the majority of MSKIs are, and we can do that through specific strength training.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think is, and that's the direction they've had to go, which I completely get. And I was on board with that from the start.
Cool. So you just mentioned there, obviously, specific strength training. In an ideal world, then, would you say that so the implementation of the data from the assessment at the start should be an individualized program for one person?
Yeah. And that's so people get worried when I say this. Now, I've got a piece of technology that allows me to do this, which is actually going to go into the military. It was starting off as going over into the US military. It is actually going to come into the British military. So individualizing training is the way forward. Now, that for a lot of military personnel is a scary concept because they feel that the what's known as the psychosocial element of training will go. So group training, because we're going to fight as a group. we should train as a group.
Absolutely, yeah.
You can still train as a group from individualizing training. We can get 30 people on the shop floor all doing a specific lower limb strength session. One person may be doing that because they can't squat, they're doing a sit to stand. This person over here who's a British Army weightlifter, they can have the bar over the head. We're all still working in our own percentages and our rate of perceived exertion, our own rep sets, tempo is different, but we're all still achieving something. We're all in that same zone where we're like, his 70% over there is completely different to her 70% over there. We can still train together. We just understand our individual biological differences.
Yeah.
And if we know that, we can move forward and everyone gets better. But if we all go on the shop floor, which is the absolute bane of my life, and you see it and it's got every single barbell is exactly the same. We've got one for Gian over here and you're working in 20% of the zone and you're in 150% of someone else's zone over here and they can't do it and they're getting screamed at because they can't do it. It's like, it's shit. It's just, there's no other way of saying it. It's just poor.
Absolutely.
And that still happens.
And something as basic as how people slept the night before. You know, I slept six hours the night before. I'm not going to train as hard. Well, of course you aren't.
Yeah, of course. And I've just, I've just released an app known as the Red On Challenge, which before you go onto any sort of session, you do a physical readiness questionnaire. And it asks you, how did you sleep? Are you stressed?
Yeah.
How's your day going? Loads of like just simple questions like that, and from those questions, it completely changes the outlook of your training session that day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if you've had a poor sleep and you've had a stressful day, or there's other parts of that questionnaire that are really low on score, it's going to affect how you train. So we need to train at a lower percent to A, still get you out to move, and B, to train in a percentage that is more specific to your current situation.
Absolutely. And I feel that, you know, even that word of coaching, then you could almost call coaching mentoring as well. So having a conversation with someone, I didn't sleep too good last night. Okay, well, let's look at why you didn't sleep too good. And then you're not just looking at what they're doing, as you describe, on the shop floor. You're actually looking at the hours outside of the gym as well. Because it's not just obviously that 1 hour in the gym, it's 24 hours in a day. So,
yeah.
Awesome. So just on that then, so people would be doing their own, they'll all be together. So they're working as the group. So a question I've always had around that would be someone who they're going away on operations, working in a small team, and they need to practice CASIVAC, you know, something quite simple, obviously not an ideal situation, but if everyone's doing their own individual things, how then would you tie in that group training where it's a same sort of mission, essentially?
So group training doesn't change. We still go and do those specific green training, but how we train to get to that piece of training may be differently. So let's consider what the muscles that we're going to use in that CASIVAC, you know, depending on where that's going to go. We can individually train those to make those great and then come together. We've all trained together, just an individual. But then when we get on task with the green training, that's where we showcase that what we've done prior has built up to that. You know, so what we've done for the 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks prior, where we've all been training together, but on little individual things where one person's shoulder mobility is a load of shit, but the lower limb strength's really good. So what we've done is we've managed to maintain that lower limb strength, but improve their mobility incredibly in the shoulders, where someone might be the absolute opposite. And we've brought those together as well. And once we get carrying that CASIVAC, everyone's singing off the same song sheet. We've all this hybrid athlete where every component of fitness, which the new SCR is trying to achieve, it's trying to test every component of fitness. So we've now got specific data to showcase who's good at what. And what we should be then doing is, if they're great at that, maintain it and improve it slightly, because the higher the training age in something, the harder it is to improve. So if you get a 1% increase over here, then that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But if they're, I don't know, their aerobic capacity of the 2 kilometers is a load of shit, but we get a 15% increase over there, then that's great. But we have to bring all those together in order to get that casualty off the battlefield.
Yeah.
And everything comes together for that one moment. So that group training doesn't go. This is whenever I've had these conversations with, you know, generals and brigadiers and whatever it is, that always comes up. So how do we do that? And that doesn't go. It should never go, because we're going to fight together. We train together.
Sure.
But we earn the right to do that.
Cool. I like that. And almost then looking at it, you know, like how obviously the army goes on exercises and things like that, doing sort of tasks or drills like that are basically another assessment. It's exercise and what we've done in the past. Yeah. It's, you know, we're testing and assessing the things we've done individually in the gym and sort of the theory as well. That's, yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Sounds good, man.
And exercise is still training. So I get this all the time where it's like, well, they'll be on a program with me and then I go, oh, for fuck's sake, I'm going away for 2 weeks. You know, what am I going to do about training? I'm like, no, you are training. It couldn't get any more specific than that.
You know, this is what we're training for.
That's what you're training for. So when I work with, you know, MMA fighters, it's like, what you do on the mat, I can't get close to that. As an S&C coach, there's nothing I can do that's any better than what you do on those mats. It's so specific. It's exactly what you need. You know, and what I do in the gym will not come anywhere near that.
Yeah. Awesome. I just want to touch on mindset. I did mention I'd sort of bring this up. Firstly, your mindset, mate. Obviously, you've gone through the army. You've then transferred a parachute regiment, transferred to the PT Corps. You've got this drive within you for the coaching, for helping people improve physical fitness. Where's this sort of mindset, do you think it's come from for you?
It's probably always been instilled in the paras. Their motto is being ready for anything. And I've taken that across into every sort of training program, coaching platform I've ever done, is about making sure that, like I mentioned before, every component of fitness is up to standard so you can be ready for anything. Because that's, no one has a clue what's behind that door as a tactical athlete, or what's over the hill, or the police officer when they, you know, try and pull over a car. No one has a clue what's coming next. In football, we can determine a lot of things. In the tactical world, we can't. So being ready for anything has always been front and center of me being, right, well, we have to train for every situation, every scenario. Whether we're going on, you know, UKSF, we train for those scenarios where you go wrong in your nav, or your strap snaps on your belt, or anything, whatever it is, we train for those situations that you will be ready. Don't worry about it. So your physical... And training people for, you know, Sandhurst, I need to ensure that people's physical health is taken care of, so it's not a barrier and we don't think about it. You can consider everything else at Sandhurst then, from your, what I consider your technical ability. So being a great officer, considering your theory, because the physical side's taken care of, don't you? It's not even a worry. You turn up, you get it done, you come home and that's it. So this mindset has been, has stemmed from being in the paras, and I've just got this absolute drive to win absolutely everything. You know, it's whatever that may be. When someone comes to me, they have to match that that drive. It's the same as me. You know, whatever the aim is, we turn up and we win.
Okay, so obviously an absolute drive to win. What happens then if you fail? Where's your mindset going there? So you've attempted something, you failed at it. What then? What?
Well, it's quite rare, but it's we learn and we go again. We reflect. We don't settle on it. We don't sit on the loss. We reflect. We understand what went wrong, why it went wrong, and we break that down into a training platform again. And that then, so what I have two different concepts of what a test is and what a competition is.
Sure.
Testing is done prior to training and intermittent throughout training. Your competition is the end goal of what we always go to achieve. So a lot of people, let's say P Company,
yeah,
that becomes a competition. But once you get there and you pass P Company, that competition now becomes a test, because that is now the stepping stone for the next competition. We move on. If that's a win or a loss, it becomes a test. We move on from it. So we use it as a springboard for the next output. And where if that's a loss, we learn. People don't really learn in wins because they sit on it and think it's great. But that's not where we come from. Whatever it is, we learn. Win or lose, we learn and we move on from it, because there's always things that we can improve. Absolutely. We just highlight it more in a loss.
Yeah, that's an awesome mindset. And obviously that's almost like a growth mindset model there. So you either win or you learn. You know, the failings only teach us things. So that's awesome to hear, mate.
Yeah.
Okay. I had a really good question about... this was it. Have you seen the physical standard of people turning up to sort of phase one training? Has that changed? So like brand new recruit, are they now fitter or are they now less fit when they first rock up to basic training, would you say?
Less, you know, because they do less before they come. So I would say that the start point is lower.
Hmm.
But it's probably lower than what it was 20, 30 years ago. And people will always say, you know, back in my day, it was such and such. I just think, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's not lower. Maybe our opinion of it is different. But I would argue that it's not hard to train someone. It really, really isn't. If you get to know someone and understand how they need what, how they move and how they need to move, the two different things, that it could be so simple to train someone. So I think the way in which we need to train someone, the way in which, especially at Harrogate, you know, they called it the Xbox generation or whatever it is. It's like, they just need a different way of training. You know, me in school, I was a little shit. You know, I had other things going on in my life that, and then I always look back now thinking, was that me? Or was it the situation? Because now, you know, I've got a degree in coaching. I understand, you know, the psychology around why people do things and how I can get the most out of people. It's now I always have that consideration. I do always think, was that me? Or was it the situation? Was it the environment? Was it the teacher? There's so much going on that could possibly change to make my life better. So it's, I would say they're different, and the way in which we need to teach them are different.
Yeah, cool.
But we can all get the same output, the same, we can still achieve the same things. So maybe this at a slightly lesser standard, and there'll be veterans and people from the old generations well before us saying, no, back in my day, we could do this, we could do that. Yeah, but you didn't have anything else. You would literally play outside from first light to last light.
Okay, so yeah.
Your physical prowess is incredible. Yeah.
The environment, yeah, of growing up now has changed. So perhaps we're indoors more.
But on a flip side, if we consider how well that people adapt to like games and, you know, the technology behind it, they're so much better now at that. So effectively, can we bring that over to like how you handle a weapon system? Should that be a little bit easier? Because these people are learning so much shit so often, like so much complex stuff. You think you get people turn up to Harrogate who are like, you know, they've been coding on computers for 10 years since they've been like seven. And yeah. It's like, what the fuck? Like, how do you even consider that?
Yeah. Yeah. So almost the areas of improvement have changed then. Mm-hmm. Like you say, that's cool. So I don't want to drag us out too much. Like I said, just sort of half an hour, mate. Last little thing. One piece of advice for listeners, just for achieving any sort of fitness goal. And I appreciate that's a very broad brush, but almost just one piece of like a key bit of information you could sort of give the listeners.
It's a concept that I've wrote recently in a book that's being released this year. So it's chapter one. It's understanding who you are, where you are, and where you want to be. And I break that up into what's known as the battlefield. Now, the battlefield can be quite militarized, where people think, oh, a battlefield is, you know, is guns and bombs. But the battlefield can be absolutely anywhere. It can be in the desert. It can be in the boardroom. But it's understanding about where you currently are in the testing we just talked about. And that's not just about your physical health. It's about your mental health. It's about your psychosocial health. It's your family. And it's understanding, you know, where you want to be. And it's bridging that gap. So if you want to go on UKSF selection, then everything has to be in line with your family on board. And, you know, because it's a lot of time away that people normally sack it because they're just like, why am I doing this? It's wet, it's windy, you know. So you really need to understand first and foremost about, do you actually really want it? So a piece of advice is to understand your battlefield and understand everything within that and understand that if that aim is that big, you have to have everything in place to go and reach that aim. So understand who you are, everything around you, and then bridge the gap between that and where you want to be.
Awesome. Great bit of advice, mate. Thank you very much.
Thanks, mate. Been a pleasure, mate.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please give it a share with someone else that you think would enjoy it too. Have an awesome day.